You're listening to The 21st. I'm Lee Gaines. Last March, governors across the country issued public health emergencies, requiring social distancing and the closure of non-essential businesses. For most of us, this was the beginning of a year full of uncertainty, disrupted routines, and isolation. But the closure of non-essential businesses was especially difficult for people living with an intellectual disability because routine is important to their mental health and their development of vocational, social, and personal skills. The Handicap Development Center in the Quad Cities offers services to people with intellectual disabilities. The center and its clients have faced many challenges over the past year. Now, however, COVID-19 vaccines are offering the center hope and relief for both participants and staff. Joining us to talk about this is Jeff Ashcraft, who is the CEO and president of the Handicapped Development Center in the Quad Cities. Jeff, thanks for taking the time.
Thank you, Lee. Glad to be here.
And listeners, perhaps you know someone living with an intellectual disability, or perhaps you are that person. Maybe you have a question for Jeff, or you want to share how the pandemic affected your ability to get the services you or your loved ones need. You can join the conversation by giving us a call at 800-222-9455. Again, that number is 800-222-9455. So, Jeff, first, what is the Handicap Development Center, and who do you serve?
So HDC is an organization whose mission is designed specifically to support adults, mainly adults with intellectual and physical disabilities. We provide four different services, two different types of residential services, and then an employment services program and also a day services program. All services are designed to help our participants to succeed, to help them to achieve, to help them to grow, and to help them be happy and to be integrated members of our community, just like anybody else.
And so for people who aren't familiar, can you briefly describe what an intellectual disability is?
Oh, sure. An intellectual disability is some sort of, whether it's through a brain injury or whether it's through a condition that somebody's been diagnosed with or at birth, or a disease that impacts somebody from an intellectual standpoint that may have, as an example, impacted their IQ or lowered their IQ through a brain injury or something along those lines. So they may have a whole variety of needs from just from social awareness or not being able to quite provide all the support they need to independently live on their own. It's all based on that individual and what their the disability's impact on them as a person.
And so I want to go back to mid-March of last year when Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds ordered a shutdown of many businesses and restrictions on gatherings. How did you and your staff respond? What were you all feeling?
Well, we had about a two-hour notice to shut down all of our day services at that time. And so our response, although I certainly wouldn't say we were expecting it, but it wasn't also a surprise. And we had to move quickly because we operate 365 days a year, 7 days a week. We couldn't just shut down services for everybody. What we did is we took all of our resources and pointed them towards our residential programs to make sure that all the supports that those people needed to continue to live in the community, to continue to live in group home settings, or we have a 60-bed residential center, all our resources were focused on trying to make sure that those individuals were supported initially. The next thing we did then is to try to make sure that we were staying in touch with those people who weren't in our residential services, but who may have been in our day services, our employment services, because just because we weren't going to be open for them didn't mean that we couldn't or shouldn't stay in contact with them. Not only did we have to, we needed to for their benefit and for ours as well.
And Jeff, we only have a couple minutes before we have to take a short break. We're going to continue that conversation after the break. But I just want to ask you, you know, how did your residents and clients respond to that initial shutdown? I mean, how I imagine it was probably fairly traumatic for them.
A lot of anxiety. You know, none of us, including those of us without intellectual disabilities, really knew or understood what was happening. We just knew that we were shutting down and everybody's routine was going to be disrupted. And when you're interrupting routines of people with disabilities or people without disabilities, it can be a pretty anxious time for everybody. And it certainly was that for the participants that we serve.
Yeah. And then just very quickly, before we go to break, is there in general a shortage of these kinds of services?
There's not a shortage of organizations who provide services, but there are a shortage of people who want to go into this type of work. I could tell you right now, I could hire 50 people right now if I could find people who wanted to do this type of work and provide these types of services. It's hard work, it's rough hours, and unfortunately, because of the rates at which we are reimbursed for our services, it's not always the best pay.
And if you're just tuning in, this is The 21st. I'm Lee Gaines, filling in for Brian Mackey. We've been speaking with Jeff Ashcraft, the CEO and president of the Handicap Development Center in the Quad Cities, about the challenges of providing services to adults with intellectual disabilities during the pandemic. We are going to continue this conversation after a short break. Welcome back to The 21st. I'm Lee Gaines, filling in for Brian Mackey. We've been speaking with Jeff Ashcraft, the CEO and president of the Handicapped Development Center in the Quad Cities, about the challenges of providing services to adults with intellectual disabilities during the pandemic. So, Jeff, there was a recent Quad City Times article about the HDC that mentioned one of your clients, Katie Beard, who is a 32-year-old with an intellectual disability. And prior to the pandemic, Katie socialized with friends, volunteered at a local food bank, went to museums and movies. All of these activities, as we know now, are not COVID-19 friendly. So I'm curious, you know, what kind of impact did the pandemic have on the services that people like Katie could receive?
So folks like Katie oftentimes go to what in our industry is called dehabilitation. And what dehab services are is the opportunity for people with disabilities to be in a productive environment that allows them to be integrated into the community in ways that they choose. So in other words, we don't structure activities for them. They get to decide what activities that they're interested in and want to be involved in. Well, as you stated, Lee, so many of the things that we all enjoyed and took for granted were shut down during the course of the pandemic. And so a lot of those activities and opportunities for them to be in the community just were not available. Our job was to try to then keep our participants like Katie engaged in ways that still kept them active, still gave them choices of the things that they wanted to do. But obviously we couldn't have them oftentimes out of their house or out of their group home, but still kept them engaged not only with us, but more importantly with their peers and, if we could, with the community as well.
And how were you able to do that?
Virtually. I mean, we all laugh about it and we're all sick of it, but Zoom saved our lives. We were able to schedule virtual activities for them to be involved in if they so chose to do so. And we were blown away at the number of participants and even their family members who sat in on our Zoom activities that allowed them to stay engaged and keep them mentally fit and allowed them to socialize with their friends and with the people, the staff that they're used to seeing on a regular basis.
Can you give me an idea of what some of those Zoom activities were?
For example, some of them were pretty simple, where we'd play almost like video games, where we do like video Jeopardy or video match games, things like that. And then we'd do other things that might be a little bit more healthy and holistic, like bringing yoga instructors in and dance instructors in. And we would bring them into our facility here, or we would connect with them in their facility so that we could remain socially distanced and safe. But that would, they would then take them through a yoga class. And they'd sit there maybe with mom and dad or brother and sister and do yoga along with myself. I participated in some of those as well, or some other staff members or some of their other peers. And they just loved it. And according to their family members and their guardians, looked forward to those activities every single day. The challenge was keeping a good variety of things that gave people good options to choose from.
Yeah. And so those are clients that you're interacting with virtually, but you also have residents, as you mentioned. I'm wondering how HDC helped both the folks that you were helping virtually and also your residents who are physically in the facility deal with isolation. I imagine that a lot of those residents, maybe they weren't able to see family members during the pandemic.
They weren't. In fact, our residential center right now has just over the course of the last 6 weeks or so just begun to open back up to visitors, primarily family members, so that they can see their family for the first time. And some family members have chosen still not to go in and see because they just want to be very, very cautious. And so we have people who haven't seen family and friends in person for a very long time. What we did though is our staff, Lee, really deserve capes with big S's on their chests because they were superheroes. They went into not only our residential center, our group homes, but our community residential sites, and they went in and continued to provide the services. So direct support professionals like the people who work here at HDC and work at organizations all across the country are sort of those hidden essential workers that may not have gotten quite the notoriety that maybe our food service, not our food service, but our grocery clerks and our nurses and our doctors and our first responders got, because they're hidden in the community, but they're providing an essential service throughout the pandemic by literally going in the home, staying engaged with people, helping them to remain healthy, helping them to exercise, helping them to get their medications, making sure they're toileted and bathed and intimate care is taken care of. So that's what our staff did to engage folks, not to mention to provide them with healthy activities that kept their minds and their bodies engaged as well.
And if you're just tuning in, this is the 21st. I'm Lee Gaines, filling in for Brian Mackey. We've been speaking with Jeff Ashcraft, the CEO and president of the Handicap Development Center in the Quad Cities, about the challenges of providing services to adults with intellectual disabilities during the pandemic. You can join the conversation by giving us a call at 800-222-9455. And now I want to pivot to a question about safety, and this would involve your staff as well. I understand that at one point over the summer, Jeff, that 60% of HDC's residents had tested positive for COVID. How did the center deal with that?
Well, that was 60% of the residents at our residential center. And so it was pretty harrowing for a while, because not only were our residents testing positive, but our staff was also testing positive. I mean, the good news is that the majority of them were asymptomatic, but nonetheless, we still had the concern of the spread of the virus amongst the organization. So we really had to lock down that particular facility to make sure that only the most essential staff could get into the building, and that then when the staff left that building, that they were absolutely isolating themselves until the outbreak had passed. It really got to the point then where we had some staff leave, or we were such short staffed where we had to get a special blessing from the state of Iowa that allowed us to have some of our asymptomatic staff who were still positive with the virus work, because we didn't have many staff who were available to work because many were showing symptoms as well. So it was harrowing, but our team stepped up to the plate, and we had people from around the organization jump into the residential center and work there who don't normally work there, and then had to stay there for the course of about 6 weeks.
Wow. Wow. So now with the arrival of the COVID-19 vaccines, I understand that many of your staff and clients have been vaccinated. What do the services look like now? Have you opened? It sounds like you're opening back up. You're transitioning to in-person services.
We expect by next Monday that we will have all of our services completely reopened. Now, that doesn't mean we'll see all of our participants back, because some get their residential services from other providers who aren't quite there yet or haven't gotten their vaccines. Some are with family members who've said, we're keeping our loved one home until we're very, very comfortable, and we're not quite comfortable yet. But we'll see all services restored as of Monday, and we'll see somewhere between 90 and 95% of all of our participants back in service of one kind or another. So it's an exciting time for us. It's so much fun to see so many familiar faces back where they belong and see them happy again to be in the services that they so enjoy.
Yeah, so it sounds like people are really, on the whole, very excited about that transition back to in-person services. But something that, you know, I hear a lot as an education reporter is concern about regression. That's something that is of particular concern for people in the special education sphere. For adults with intellectual disabilities, I'm wondering if that's something that you're concerned with, that this time, that this lack of in-person interaction has caused regression among some of your clients and residents. Is that something you're seeing? How are you dealing with that?
It has. We have seen it, but we have not seen it, Lee, to the level that we thought we were going to see it. So it really is much more of a minority than we expected. The flexibility that our participants had shown us was way more than any of us would have expected. That's not to say, though, we don't have some people who are just they've regressed to the point where they need some help that's beyond our services. I can think of one individual who just this week, his family was able to get him admitted to the University of Iowa in Iowa City because he's to the point where he literally will not get out of bed. He will not take any of his medications. And he had regressed to the point where he was beyond anything that we could do for them and his family could do for him. So now he needs a much stronger medical intervention. Again, that's not the majority of people, but we have seen a few of those cases, and that's really tragic.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that. But I am glad to hear that it hasn't been the majority of the people that you're serving. I do want to get in a question about the financial realities of the type of organization, the type of work that you do. I know that the pandemic has caused a lot of strain on many budgets. Has it caused a strain on yours? Have you had to lay people off? Have you had to cut staff hours or reduce pay in any way?
I am very proud to say that we did not lay a single employee off during the course of the pandemic. And in fact, in many cases, what we've done is raise pay. One, because we had to keep people working and to incent new people into this field. And we've been fortunate that we've been able to keep our billing pretty well intact, in addition to the additional funds that we received through the different legislation that came through the federal government. So we've been very fortunate in that regard, that we've been able to bill for most of our services and have a little bit of a cushion in some regards because of some of the stimulus funds we received as well. So we were able to stock up on plenty of PPE. We were able to make sure that we could pay hazard pay, and we could redirect all of our staff into areas that would keep them employed. And that's a blessing for us.
And is that increased pay something you're able to maintain? I know you mentioned at the top of this segment that you're struggling to get people to come to work, that you would love to hire more people, but it's hard to attract them. Is pay one of those reasons?
It is. And we do believe that we're going to be able to maintain the increased pay for some of our direct support professional positions, especially those ones that are harder to fill because they're working like a third shift, or they're, you know, working weekends, or they're living in a community residential site for a portion of their week. We have been able to elevate that pay to make it more competitive. And we'll keep doing that until we find the right sweet spot, because we're not going to give up on providing those services to our participants. It's way too important. So we'll keep reallocating and figuring it out until we find the exact right combination.
And so, you know, we've talked a lot about challenges and we only have a few minutes left, but I do want to mention that there's been growth in the center's HDC Enterprises program, which offers clients with intellectual disabilities part-time jobs. Can you briefly describe this program and some of the jobs that people are doing?
Absolutely. So like many organizations like HDC, they started with what you would know maybe as a sheltered workshop. And sheltered workshops have gone way out of vogue for a variety of reasons. But they provided a vital service because they provided a safe environment for people with intellectual disabilities to be successful in the workplace. And maybe some of those people have been out in the community working at, you know, familiar places that you and I might go to or familiar brands that we might know, but maybe they weren't familiar in those settings. But in a setting that's designed specifically for them, they can be successful. So our enterprise operation launched in January of 2020 with the idea being that we would provide a safe workplace for people to do light manufacturing, kitting, and things like that. We started with 15 of our former participants as employees. We're now up to 31. I anticipate that we will do about $1.1 million in revenue in that operation. And we're looking to hire some more of our former participants as staff. Now, they're not full-time, but many of them can't be full-time because they have other benefits they get through SSI and other things. But they want to work. They want to be productive and they want to support themselves. And our business partners like John Deere or Springfield Armory or Wall Clippers really need the support of organizations like ours to be able to help them fulfill their supply chain as well. So it's been a huge success so far. And we're hoping that we're going to continue to see the trend move upward.
And a success despite the pandemic, it sounds like.
And I hate to say it, but the pandemic may have actually helped us because when others were having to lay people off or were having to quarantine, they were relying on us to help them fulfill the needs of getting their product to the shelves. So it's an exciting time for us. And we have a big enough space that we are able to keep people socially distanced. And we bought backpack sprayers to sanitize our areas efficiently and on and so forth.
Thank you so much, Jeff. I'm glad we get to end on a happy note. We've been speaking with Jeff Ashcraft, the CEO and president of the Handicapped Development Center in the Quad Cities. And this is The 21st, a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Lee Gaines.